Greet you in Jesus' name this evening. It has been a pleasure to be here. We already have talked about how much we're enjoying this day, I mean Joyce and I, and we've also talked about how radically different y'all are than when we were here. None of the people that sat with me on the front bench are here tonight. They're gone. I don't know where they're all gone. Some to eternity and some to other responsibilities, and so have I. And it just amuses me how hard we try to keep life from changing and how insistent it is that it will change whether it has our approval or not. And we have to come to peace with all of that. But it is a pleasure to see church life happening here, and I sensed many similarities to what I remember from serving here in this congregation and enjoying the church life here. It's just a reward again to taste it. The dangers of social networking. I was very thankful for your devotions, Brother Darrell, for two reasons. Number one, I feel intimidated that I am presenting a meditation that I am not satisfied has enough of scripture in it. You've asked me to talk about a very technical subject, and you can't really go into the Bible and find verses about social networking in the sense that it's defined in the world today, because there are some pieces of our technology that are present that were not in Bible times. But there are Bible principles, and I was thankful for the devotions because Brother Darrell went back to a foundational principle that I thought about in preparation but never put in these notes that is so necessary to remember, and that is that God is watching. We talk about accountability when it comes to technology, and there's a very helpful place for it. But I have found in my own little circle of administration that there are flat-out situations where accountability is not helping people. It just isn't working. They are not afraid to sin against God. Now, they're a little uneasy about other people finding out, but time and time again, I have sat with the sinner and said, "What were you thinking?" "I don't know." "Oh, well, then you mustn't have been. Didn't you realize God?" "I forgot God was watching." Well, that's unfortunate, but he doesn't let you off that easy. He will watch whether you know that he's watching or not. And we just had to hear that again before we talked about the dangers of social networking. It's a very broad subject, and I do feel intimidated by it because it is so huge, and I can allude to so many things, and if I don't define them or explain what I'm talking about, many of us will get lost in the shuffle. But before we go into the technical part of it, I'd like you to open your Bibles to Romans 15. This is not really talking about social networking per se, as we're going to look at it tonight, but it is talking about networking. And it really does give a scriptural ideal for us to live in. And I'd just like to read the first six verses as some scripture verses to meditate on as we get started. Romans 15, verse 1, "We then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let every one of us please his neighbor for his good to edification, for even Christ pleased not himself, but as it is written, the reproaches of them that reproached thee fell on me. For whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. Now the God of patience and consolation grant you to be like-minded one toward another according to Christ Jesus, that ye may with one mind and one mouth glorify God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ." This scripture is talking about brotherhood, Christian brotherhood. It's talking about how church life ought to function. And it simply says that in a church life, you can expect that there's going to be strong people and there's going to be weak people. And those that are strong are supposed to make it their business to go around to these weak people and bear them up. Now, sometimes we get into this little perplexing question, well, who is strong? If I would ask you all to raise your hand, who of you think you're strong, you're not sure if you want to put your hand up or not. It seems a little arrogant to do that. And of course, the next thing I'm going to tell you will then get busy with the weak. And we don't try real hard to define who is strong and who is weak. But without even having to determine that, we can simply live our lives with the motto that I will seek to please my neighbor for his edification. It's all about him instead of it all being about me. And it says that that's the way Christ lived. You see, the Christian Brotherhood models Jesus Christ. He is their example. He is their leader. He is the head. He is our brother. He's the one that we say, oh, you did it that way. Now we know how to do it. And in so doing, we follow Christ. And it would be interesting to somehow listen to Jesus stand up here this evening and talk what he thinks about Twitter. How many followers do you think he would have? What would he say on Twitter? You know, Twitter, if you know anything about it, is a social media that most people have it as an app on their phone, and you build yourself a little account, and you release little 1 and 2 sentence, maybe 1 paragraph bursts, and you just make a statement, and 20 seconds later, you can do it again, and you can just blitz this out. And anybody that knows about you or knows about your account, I'm not even quite sure how the whole network works that y'all would find out that I have this account or I would tell you about it, but you can read that. And every time Dwayne twits something out, you get it on your phone and you can look at it and, okay. So that's, and not long ago, somebody showed me a Twitter account of somebody that used to be with us, and they decided they wanted to go to another church, and they went, and there was no problem with social media there as we have defined it. And so they got a Twitter account. And look at what they put on. And it was about every half hour. Good morning, it said Sunday morning. A little later, ate breakfast. And then a little later, it said going to church. And about 2 hours later, it said going home from church. And then it said had a good dinner. And I wondered who in the world, how would Jesus do that? Going to Bethany. 4 days later, got stopped. And his life was so simple that he wouldn't have anything to twit. Fed 5,000. 5 loaves, 2 small fishes, and everybody would like it. Thumbs up, Jesus, you got it. Okay, this is social networking in one expression. Now, there's at least 160 other ways you can do it, according to Wikipedia. But how would Jesus do it? Would he even have wanted that kind? You see, the ministry of Christ was not textual. It was completely personal. He walked everywhere. As far as we know, he had 1, maybe 2 donkey rides. You just don't read about him. He walked, he talked, he shook hands, he hugged, he touched, he healed, he brought along, he spoke to the Pharisees. It was very personal. And what I mean by personal is he just talked. Now, there was a few times where he would take people and he'd say, now, I want you to send you out and you be my representatives. You talk about me. And the people would go around. And the 2 by 2, the 70 did what he did. They healed the sick. They preached the gospel. But it was all very personal. And sometimes I wonder, and what Jesus would have done. And it's not really that he didn't have mass media at his fingertips. There's at least a couple of times where the celestial heavens spread out a message for him. The angels did it at his birth. I mean, now that's one way to network. If you could have the angels do the talking and the singing for you, that's quite a network. He had it. Another time when he got baptized, the heavens opened up and the Spirit of God came out like a dove and the heavens spoke. Everybody heard at the feast. A voice would come out, and some would say it thundered. Others said, no, a prophet spoke. No, it was the Lord. And it's amazing what all technology he had at his fingertips, but he never used it. He could have wrapped the world up with networking if he really wanted to. But the example that he set was just going from village to village, shaking the hands, healing the sick, comforting the sad, etc. There's a sense in which the first generation of Christians wrote their letters, but Jesus didn't. Paul, Peter, John, we have them in our Bibles this morning. Sunday school lesson was on from John, and it's a letter he wrote. I think when you take the letter that Paul wrote to Colossians and the letter that he wrote to Ephesians, you can see that he had the same things on his mind. He just didn't have a photocopier, so he wrote it twice and sent it to two churches. And I guess that you could say that was social networking because you were taking a message, an epistle, and putting it out. But the ultimate purpose of a body of believers, a follower of Jesus, is to serve one another and also, of course, to glorify God. It says that in verse 6, that with one mind and with one mouth, these people that are working for each other and seeking not their own good, they're going to glorify God, even the Lord, Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. 1 Corinthians 10:31-33. Everything you do should be to the glory of God. Now, one of the things that happens when you start talking about technology like social networking is that the generations gaps come in focus really fast. And my children already warned me that the young people are going to have a certain guard up against what this preacher is going to say, and the old men are going to hope that this preacher really nails this thing down and puts it in its right place, and the dads are going to hope that the preacher somehow fixes the problem for their youth. And there's some tensions that go on in a public discussion like this that I'm aware of. And I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to have a bias when I talk about this for two reasons. Number one, I've made some observations, and I can't help it. It's kind of how human beings do. When you see, you observe, and you come to some conclusions. On a deeper level, I've had a few sorrowful experiences of trying to help someone who has gotten tangled in the dangers of social networking, and they have had to pay the price on their own soul. And when you see a shipwreck, it affects how you feel about that particular area of life. You know, if you see people smash up on motorcycles, you start to feel that way about motorcycles. You know what I'm talking about? Okay, that's going to bias what I say tonight. I just want to tell you that up front. I would just appeal that somehow the grandpas and the young people could come together on this. As far as I know, there's only two things that really are defined differences between grandpas and teenagers. The one is that the teenagers have a lot more enthusiasm and energy than the grandpas do, and number two is that the grandpas have a lot more experience than the young people do. And I don't think we should hold it against the young people for having their enthusiasm or the grandpas for not having it any more than we should hold it against the young people for not having their experience or the old men for having it. Neither of those people groups can change those facts about themselves. We need to work with respect to that. And so somehow, I think in many ways, the young people and the grandpas are looking at the same thing, but because the one has enthusiasm and the other one has experience, it leans them slightly different directions. And unless they work together, they will be polarized and come out and will say, oh, we have a generation gap, and it's true. What is social networking? My little dictionary says it's the creation and maintenance of business and personal relationships online. So whatever we are doing in this social networking thing, it's online or it's with the internet. Now the internet, I don't believe, is inherently bad, but I can also tell you that it's not inherently good. It's neither of those two. It has a lot of corruption in it and on it, and it has a lot of good in it and on it. And I find that as I watch churches and societies wrestle with it, that nobody is really conquering it. But the wars go on a very personal and small scale level, and that is where the victories are being won. And whatever we are doing in social networking, according to the dictionary, it is being defined as relationships. And that is kind of a sneaky term. Well, relationships is a very broad term, because relationship can be something as intimate and as clearly defined as what Joyce and I have, and it's also as vague and as smoky as what myself and Roger Bizet have. Roger and I have known each other since 1998. We met at a water quality convention. He is an engineer in Sarasota, Florida. And I took I was sent by Martins to take a course on a certain technology. I was there all week and I met Roger. Later on, he started his own business building those machines, and our company switched from the one that I used to work for to his. And in the last, 1998 to 2016 would be 18 years. In 18 years, I have talked to him as often as once a week, but I've only ever met him one time, and that was at that trade show. I know what he looks like. Occasionally, we'll send pictures of what we're doing to each other, but we have a relationship. He has my cell phone number. I have his. I can call him at 9 o'clock at night, and he will answer the phone if I am in over my head on a technical problem. He says, oh, it's Dwayne, and he'll answer. We have that kind of relationship, but it's not even close to what Joyce and I have, okay? And this tells you how big it is when we start talking about relationships. And if I talk about social networking relationships, I'm talking about something that's happening online. It's very broad and at times very vague, and yet it is very well used. Now, I wasn't satisfied with what the dictionary said, so I went online and I pulled up Wikipedia, which is the granddaddy of all encyclopedias, and I found that for social networking, when I printed it out, it was 32 pages long. So that was a little more clearly defined than the dictionary, who had three lines. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing. I didn't actually even read all of it, but it had a lot of interesting data. Some of it is so technical you would fall asleep, and I wouldn't even know what I'm saying. Some of the words I wasn't even sure how to pronounce. But I tried to glean some pertinent information out of those 20, well, I took away the bibliography at the back, and there was 28 pages left over. So I printed them out, and I just went through with a highlighter, and well, this is worth talking about. This is, okay, and I'm going to try and give you some of that. It said that as of 2013, 70% of Americans use some form of social networking services. I also found it interesting that in its outline of 28 pages, that it went on and it expressed 10 benefits that social networking does for culture. And it listed some of them. The way that it brings, it connects people together that are long lost. You can stay in touch with social networking, with a missionary on the mission field, an ex-college student. There's just a lot of different ways you can stay in touch. It has become a very powerful and efficient tool for advertising, and they list 10 benefits of social networking. What's fascinating to me is that it then listed 19 concerns of what's wrong with it. And it was fascinating that, see, the way Wikipedia works is it's not like Harvard University has put a world book is putting an encyclopedia together, but rather what Wikipedia is it is an open forum that you can build, and people are allowed to add information to that and pull information out of it. There's criteria of how you do that, but what it is a very homogenized set of information. And so somebody from Singapore and somebody from Frystown can contribute to Wikipedia and say this, but they have to agree and they have rules that they go by. But it was fascinating to me that it wasn't a Mennonite conference that was saying that there's 10 benefits and 19 concerns. It was the world wide over that was saying that. And I thought that was interesting. And I'm going to try. What I did is I read through the concerns and then I condensed what I thought were the 7 most important ones, and I want to talk about those tonight. It says on this encyclopedia that social networking is a platform to build social networks or social relationships among people who have similar interests, similar activities, similar backgrounds, or similar real-life connections. In other words, it's built upon the similar principle. If you and I are the same, if we're both farmers, then you build a farmer social network. And the next listing below in Wikipedia is their extensive list of the social networks that are available in the world today. Now, some of them are in Iraq and Myanmar and Central America, and they're languages you can't read, so you're not interested. But on that list was 100 and somewhere between 150 and 160. I just kind of totaled it down through. And those were all the ones. They said there's others, but these are all ones that have 10,000 or more subscribers. Okay, so these are the big ones, I guess. Of course, Facebook is the biggest, and that has 2.1 billion subscribers, which is 1/3 of the world's population is subscribed to Facebook. And so there is a networking going on. That is incredible, but there's all different kinds. You've probably heard of caring bridge. Someone gets cancer, and instead of everybody just calling them or them having to sit down and write an email and send it out, you can build a little social networking site on caring bridge for this individual, and you assign somebody to put the information on there, pictures of their health journey, and everybody can look at that. There's a place where you can feel sorry for them or feel compassion toward them and pledge money to them to help pay for their medical expenses, and it can be a very beneficial thing. It's something like Caring Bridge, very specific. There's some for college students. And there's also on top of this, I don't know where blogs fit into this, and that is where people just write in what they want. There's all kinds of blogs out there. There's even one for Mennonites. I'm sure some of you have heard of Menno Discuss. Some of our own people write on there. They just, hey, I've got something to say about what the Mennonites think, and they put it in, and you can pick them out. Menno Discuss. Some of it is rank cynicism and arrogance. Some of it is beneficial information. And we just have to decide what we're going to do with all of that and how much time we're actually going to invest in it. LinkedIn is for business professionals. Pinterest is for Mennonite women and their recipes. I just made that up. It's actually a lot bigger than that. But I don't understand how it works very well, but I do know that that's the number one plea. It's the best cookbook in the world. If you have Pinterest, why, then you can really get some good stuff. The encyclopedia said that there's main kinds of networks, categories or places, friendship connections, or review and recommendation systems build on trust. And so there's a whole set of networking that goes on in the review world. And one of the things that I learned in my studies is that at this time, as of 2014, did I write that down anywhere? Don't believe I did, but it went something like this, that from the ages of 18 to 35, 90-some percent of the world's population goes to review sites for recommendations, and if you're 50 years or older, you depend almost exclusively on word-of-mouth referrals. And that's the old school of ways. And when we moved to Tyrone, I Googled very little because I've seen enough of what people write in reviews to Martin Water Conditioning that I don't have a whole lot of time for the review system because it's as cheap as what you can hit on your keyboard. And you can say, you know, you guys are totally awesome, and they'll rip the system out tomorrow morning. I'm amazed at how many people review a product before they actually ever used it. I just got this in the mail today. Looks great. Well, big deal. You didn't even use it. How do you know it's good? Lawnmower's going to even start tomorrow morning? Okay, but this is the shift in culture, and people 18 to 35 in America are known to depend very heavily on this. And so if you want to do successful marketing, you really have to decide how you're going to hit that group. Social networking is your answer. You can get right into their face, and they don't even mind. It's what they're looking for. Now, social networking makes it possible to connect people who share, this is the encyclopedia again, who share interests, activities across political, economic, and geographical borders. You see, social networking has actually always been around. If you stop and think about it, this Tower of Babel was built to be a social networking system. They were afraid they were going to disconnect and go apart, and they agreed that they would all work together on this tower up to the heavens so that nothing could divide them. And it was that tower that united them and networked them together. It's very, very old. But even since the telephone came along and the party lines, there was a networking going on, and you could call somewhere, and if you just paused after you said hello, sometimes you'd hear a soft click as a neighbor lady would pick up and listen in on your conversation. She was networking with you. She wanted to hear what you were talking about. Okay? For years, we've had the budget, and the plain people have had their own social networking system. And you know, there's people that thing comes Tuesday afternoon, supper Tuesday night's going to be hot dogs because I got to read the budget. I want to know what's happening in Kelowna, Iowa. And it's a social network is what it is. It's where people with similar interests are reaching out, and people will sit down and will write down, how many of you trust the budget? Should it be trusted? Well, sometimes. But you've seen it be wrong. Well, that's social networking for you. the writer has to always pick between being right and getting there first. It's the same if you're on Twitter or Facebook. And if you have the World Trade Center fall over, you're going to have a lot of bad information go out because people will speculate because they're driven to get the information out. Well, if you would take the budget and somehow put it over onto Twitter that you don't have to wait 2 weeks to get this thing in the mail, but you could get it as soon as the Amishman wrote it down, wouldn't that be better? Wouldn't that make a tighter community? Wouldn't we know better who preached and who had the text? Faster? Well, that's just what's happening in social media. And the truth is that in some situations, the budget has moved to Twitter, and now mom isn't just not worth anything for that one afternoon when it comes in the mail. She's not worth anything any other time. Her housework's not getting done, but she's on. She's engaged. She has followers, and it's a known problem. It's one of the dangers we'll talk about in a little bit. Now, social networking is, I've said, a resource used for advertising and marketing. And I don't understand how this system works real well, but it works something like this. I'm going to go back to the budget now. If somehow the budget could figure out that when they send it to you, you always flipped open to Abbeville, South Carolina for the first one, then they would arrange it that one is at the front of the budget for you. And if you never read Goshen, Indiana, they put it on the back page in case you never got to it. And I don't quite know how this works. I know that there's algorithms built into the programming, but I do know that if any of you leave here and you drive in your car home, and when you get home, you would put out on a social networking site, my car is junk, tomorrow I'm going shopping, that you would somehow, there's a way that you would have an advertisement from the Dodge dealer, the Toyota dealer, and the GM dealer tomorrow morning when you get out of bed. It might even come in on your phone while you're still awake. And that is done intentionally. That is how the system is supposed to work. It is supposed to watch you and your interest and tailor it. I just learned something recently here. I asked somebody, I was having trouble with one of my devices that if I would use YouTube, I was getting some pretty raunchy stuff, and I couldn't figure out why my filter wasn't catching it. And I was talking to somebody, and he said, well, you go in the actual settings on YouTube. And he said, if you're getting some raunchy stuff coming up, he said, most filters do not do all that great of a job inside the system itself. He said, if you're getting raunchy things coming up, there's only one of two explanations for it. He said, either somebody in your family is using that device to search for that stuff, or else you never did, and it's just throwing it out there because it knows that most Americans want to see it. And it's just testing you to see if you're going to get it. But that is how the system behind the system works. And I don't understand it. And sure enough, we found the setting. I rechanged the setting, and it all went away, which was supposed to happen. But that's one of the dangers of social networking, and that is there's a whole system. I know for a fact that if I go to a certain community and I open up my weather app and look at the weather, that it'll start rotating ads for what people might do outside. And when I'm in a certain community, an ad will pop up on my weather app for the local lawn care company, and it's people I know. They did it themselves. They figured out how to do that. That when people check to see if the sun's going to shine tomorrow, that means they either want to rototill or mow their garden. And if it's going to be nice, it'll get a pop-up ad of your lawn care. That way, if when you go to start the mower, you looked at the weather, and it's going to be nice, so I'm going to go mow, and it doesn't start, you'll remember that you saw that ad, and you'll go back to your app, and you'll call them for your parts. The whole system is built that way, and it's incredible how it works. But it's very efficient. It beats the Yellow Pages all hollow, and it's sure better than trying to remember the billboard you saw when you were driving last week. It's so simple. It's so at your fingertips. It's available. And it's what most people are looking for. Social networking is largely individual driven. As far as I know, there is no one here tonight that is participating in a social networking service that they don't want to. You only participate in the ones you decide you want to be part of. If you want to be on Facebook, then you get on Facebook. It's not like I guess I could sit down and figure out enough about Jesse that I could put him on somehow, but then it would come to my device where I set it up and he might not ever even know. But for the most part, it's individual driven. I get on Facebook, I get on Twitter, I get on Pinterest, I get on Instagram, I get on LinkedIn, I get on Path, I get on. It's not like you wake up one morning and, never knew I was on Men of Disgust. Maybe this sermon will get on because somebody here don't like it and they write about it. But that's not. For the most part, it's individual driven. Now here's what happens. When you realize that it is mostly individual driven, you also have to understand that not only will I decide if I'm going to join, I also decide what I'm going to put on. And so it's me talking, and usually I will talk about myself. Now you can use these different networkings, whether it's Facebook or Twitter. It's possible. But most people can't stand the suspense. It's possible to just use Twitter to watch other people. That's all you do with it. But who wants to do that? I mean, the real goal is if you can get people to follow you. That's what it's all about. Especially if I can get more followers than you have. Then I've just one-upped you. It's like me buying a nicer car than you. It's all the same thing. I'm better than you. I've got more followers. See, my Twitter account shows it. Now, I'm not talking about church life right now. I'm talking about it in the raw as it's being sold to the communities and the people. When I say we, I'm just talking about society at large. We like the feeling of control that our social networking gives us. I am in control. You know what I can do if you and I are friends on Facebook and I don't like you anymore? I can get rid of you, and you can't stop me. I control this relationship, you don't. And this is, all you do is just start reading, and when you get down into some of the 19 concerns about social media, you're gonna see this start coming out. But it's so motivating to be in charge of relationships, isn't it? If you can pick the people you wanna be friends with, which one of us has never been tempted to have our own clique? We can do it on social media better than any other place in the world. All right, let's get practical on the actual dangers that I have listed here. My family is worried because they know I have way too many notes for as long as I preach. Number one, the danger of lost privacy. I suppose I don't need to share with you that anytime you post something online, whether it's even an email sent, a text message sent, anytime you take a device and you click send, you release something that you will never get back. Y'all know that? Now you can wish for it back and you can ask for it back and you might even get some of it back, but you can't have it back, all right? When you post something, when I post something, it is available. And we normally look at it that if the person I sent the Voxer message to and he got it, then that's good. And if somebody got the message who wasn't supposed to get it, that's bad. Matter of fact, that could be really bad, especially if it's my dad or my preacher. But things have legs. And it's one of our concerns with our work in Bangladesh because we're never quite sure when something's going to get somewhere. Now, I don't know if any of you ever heard of something like Telegram. Telegram is, as far as I know, the most encrypted messaging system that's out there. It's the one that's preferred by ISIS because there's no known way to crack it. And I'm told some of our young people have it. At least I talked to one that had it, and he said other people have it. And I don't know why our young people would want it, other than that they must want to send things that they want to make sure don't go any. But even that person they send it to can send it on. They shouldn't. Anyway, we have this problem of privacy. Pictures, voice recordings, statement become free trade. And even though somebody may say they like what we posted, they might like it because they like to pass it on. And there's nothing you can do about that. You're sunk. And there's many afflicted soul who has seen the horror of this free trade. Political candidates have gone down with an ill-advised post. Girlfriends have been exposed. Married men's marriages have fallen apart. People have lost jobs. In 2009, The Philadelphia Eagles got rid of one of their star players. They thought he was too old and a fan. Went on Facebook and he railed and criticized and condemned and cussed out, in the words of the news report, the organization for what they did. And when he got to his job on Monday morning, the manager was standing at the door and he fired him on the spot, because this man actually worked for the Philadelphia Eagles. And by the time he got to work, the whole office knew what he was saying. He should have thought. But you know what? This has been happened again and again. Matter of fact, even our own company, when they go to hire somebody, they'll go look on Facebook and see who you are. The more that we tie into social networks, the less of a private life we have. This is one of the dangers, and you have to know about it. Now, I believe in living transparent, that it doesn't matter what I have or what I say or what I do. But I also know that there is a number of scriptures that talk very freely about the way that an individual maintains a private world. Be still and know that I am God. That is the spectrum opposite of post your brains on Facebook. One is very private, very contained, it's communion with your Heavenly Father, and the other one is just anything, anywhere, any place. And there is, I'm not the only one that thinks about it. It came up in a number of articles that I read about it, that there is something innate, there is something integral to social networking that prompts people to unload their brains, but you wonder if they have any. Because they just, what were they thinking, and why were they saying that, and why? But this goes out, and the privacy is gone. Because of the lost privacy, marketing gurus will target you. I talked about that. Number two, let's talk about the danger of hypocrisy. It is a commonly known problem that people can project themselves differently than they actually are in real life. And it's an old problem. Do you remember what they said about the Apostle Paul? His letters are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak. You see, Facebook is not the first time in the world that there was a possibility that a person could project themselves through the pen in a way that they weren't really in real life. And they were accusing Paul of it. And he says, oh yeah, wait till I get there, and we'll see how different I am. You can read that in the book of Corinthians. Now, this is a problem in social networking, and it's one of the dangers. People will become a monster, or just this, oh, there's just all kinds of ways we can express ourselves. People make statements of criticism, of contempt, or crass praise, and then when their posting is exposed and they are challenged, they say, oh, that wasn't me, that was just my online person. And you can actually talk to people that'll say that. Oh, that wasn't me. Oh, yes, it was. I know how this works. It's who we are. And there is something, I'll just say weird, because I don't know what other word to use, about how, whether it's sending an email, we can depart from our true self, and we can project. And if he does that, I'm going to, and they never do. You know why? Because it's that whole thing of creating the puffy cloud me that isn't me. It's just my Facebook me. Those are some of the statements you'll bump into. The Bible says in Ephesians 5:4 that we should just simply avoid foolish talking. I don't know what it is about social network that pushes us to display ourselves and to air thoughts that we would never say in person. Read some ridiculous statements. I read one illustration, person said, I'm thinking about committing suicide. What do you all think? If I would stand up here and say that on a pulpit, you'd ask me to stop and you'd take me somewhere to get help. I guess Ezra and I would go in the back room or something. Okay, but on Facebook, people do, oh, I'm just kidding, it wasn't me, that was my Facebook person. I would never do that. But it's the problem, and it's one of the dangers of social networking. When we have this opportunity to post this presentation of me, that I'll do it with a facade or with a hypocritical way. Number four is the danger of trolling and bullying. I borrowed this term from the encyclopedia article. Troll is when you fish with a line. It's when you take a hook and a line. My boys do this sometimes when we go down to the Juniata River. We don't use fishing rods, but they'll go into a little pool and they'll hang over, there's a little fish in there, and they'll just take a little string and a hook and they'll dangle it down there and they'll just drag it around in front of the fish and see if you can get them to grab. The same thing happens in social media, social networking. And sometimes it's nothing more than just a marketing ploy, but there's a really dark side to it. I don't know how many of you ever heard of the story of Meghan Myers. That one shocked the online world in 2007. I bumped into it in my studies. I had heard about it and forgotten about it, but this happened on MySpace, which is an extinct social media. But a girl by the name of Meghan Myers, 13 years old, committed suicide, and her last post on MySpace was that she was sick and tired of being bullied by Josh Evans. Now here's the problem. When the police went looking for Josh Evans, they couldn't find him. There was nobody like that. Josh Evans was a composite character built by 11 high school students, and they had created the person and invited Meghan onto the site to interact with them, and they would all take turns just boogering this girl for the fun of it until she killed herself. And at the end, the police didn't know what to do because they didn't know who to charge for what. And they had this phantom charges that they want to do, and everybody looked at it and said, "This is terrible." One writer said, "Thankfully, it's not a big problem." Then another writer commenting on said, it's a growing problem. I mean, if you're bored and you're unprincipled and you never were spanked for doing wrong, do you know how much fun it would be to bully somebody into a corner like that? I mean, we can hardly imagine the value system, but that spirit is not outside of any of our reach, that we could somehow take the fish and the hook and pull them in and then do with them what we want online. And these are some of the things that are happening in this social media, the social networking, in spite of all its wonderful benefits. It's the dark side, and that's what you want me to preach about, so that's what I'm talking about. It's the dark side of social networking, where you can target somebody. It's the old trick of the school children. "My, you look sick today. Are you feeling all right?" "Well, I don't know. I didn't eat much breakfast." And, "Well, you're pale." And of course, they made all these arrangements over in the bathroom. And after a while, they go home from school sick. And you can do it online. And it's being done. And it's one of the dangers of social networking. It's called trolling and bullying. And there's actually laws being made where a person can be prosecuted if you can catch who the real bully is. Number five, the danger of egoism and narcissism. Egoism is the doctrine that the individual self-interest is the actual motive of all consideration. Narcissism is love for one's own body. Okay, that's hard to understand, but it's just basically the doctrine that I'm number one. Would you all like to hear about it? Children are born with this, and unless parents train it out of them and the Lord saves them from it, it will come out. And again, self-projection, one writer said, occupies a high percentage of social networking. I told you about the Twitter account that someone showed me, and it was all about what they were doing. And it went on like that till they joined Plexus, and then it was all about Plexus from then on. And so you can follow their lies, but I don't know if anybody actually does, because I wasn't sure who would care. I mean, what if I would call you, "Cliff, leaving church, Harrisburg, let me go to sleep," he'd be saying. But we do this, and we think, okay, this is really, really common with movie stars. It's how you follow, fans follow their idol. These are big words for pride. And the Romans 12:3 simply says, now listen, I say by the grace God, by the grace given unto me that, well, I'm just right here at 15. For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think soberly according as God has dealt to every man the measure of faith. That's the opposite end of this danger of egoism and narcissism, and it's a possibility. Number six is the danger of wasted time. In our decrees, we tell our people that we don't want them to use the internet for idle time wasting. And in your accountability forms, it asks you if you've been doing that. But I will admit to you that nobody has set up a formula of when that's actually happening and when it's not. The worst case I could find came out of South Korea in 2011, where it was documented that two children starved to death because the mom was so addicted to online time that she abandoned her children. That's really terrible. I can't imagine how long you would have to be addicted, but apparently it's hard for me to think through that. And yet I know that parents have starved their children for other things as well. And I know that it has happened again and again that people will starve on real-life relationships for online ones. Have you ever been talking to somebody and then they're talking to you and all of a sudden they stop and, or they vox or they step away? Okay, what's going on right there is they are sacrificing a real-time relationship for an electronic one. Now, it might be their son they're talking to, and it's really important that they would talk to their son, much more important than it was 20 years ago when you couldn't. Well, that's what we think. It's just so nice that we can, and since we can, it must be right. But if you think about what happens, it's funny how urgent things outside of our sight have become when we can reach there with the tools that we have. But I have seen, even in my own world, I have seen situations where the dishes weren't getting done. And finally, you sit down with the family and say, can we see your online records? And, you know, there's 8-10 hours a day, the mother of the house, that stacks of dishes over there. It's the possibility. I'm talking about where this stuff can lead to. And it's one of the reasons why, as leaders, we have sat down and said, let's put a guideline in place that we admonish and ask our people not to waste time on the internet. You can Google a lot of things, data, but the real time killers actually happen more in the social media realm than they do out in the technical realm. It's not true for everybody. There are individuals that have specific interests and love to research things, but I would say that if you could pie graph the amount of time spent online, it would pie graph into a much bigger piece of pie in social media than it would in Googling technical things or studying the Russian dictators of the 17th or 18th century, things like that. And so we have the danger of wasted time. It's all out there. Now, I've galloped through this pretty quick because I do want to get to one more thing before I close. Actually, two more things, but they have to do with the positive side. I don't like just focusing on negative things. And I'm going to put 4 points up here for you to look at so you can see them and think about them. And this comes from a Mennonite preacher. I didn't know who he was, but a number of years ago, I found a book at the bookstore called The Church of Facebook. It was written in 2010. And I, in preparation for this message, I pulled it out and was reading and perusing it again. And toward the end, they went and found 4 men. And there was a man by the name of Shane Hipps, who was the lead pastor of the large Mennonite church in Phoenix, Arizona. And he was an avid blogger and internet user. And his cry is that the internet, and oh no, not the internet, I'm saying it wrong. His cry was that online networking or social networking is as beneficial as we use it constructively. And he says that the key problem that people overlook or totally abandon is that social networking is not valid relationships. One other writer said it this way. He said, as long as we use our communication tools for FYI, for your information steps, we're going to be all right. But when we try to do teaching or discussions or any other kind, like when you take it, okay, meet me at Esther's Diner at 7 o'clock for coffee. That's FYI information. But now, if that's a text message that I could send. But if I send a text message that says, I have a number of concerns about your life, and I'd like to meet you for breakfast at Esther's, and here are the concerns, I can guarantee you that they're going to have two different meetings. And the reason is because I have given you too much information and not enough. Now, Shane says this. He says that you can do anything you want to with social networking as long as it is a tool to accomplish real community. And he goes on to say that real community has four ingredients. As I looked at them, I said, aha, I like that, and I think it's worth sharing tonight because I just want to give you something positive to chew on as you walk away and not just cluck, cluck, cluck that how bad social networking is because Dwayne said so. So let's just talk about these four ingredients. The first ingredient that every community is going to have is shared history. Those of you that went to Pilgrim Bible School, you remember when they used to put that box out called Remember When? Oh, yeah. Yep. Remember when Sister Jane dropped the cake all over the floor? See, Lloyd remembers, and we're laughing about it. We were there. We have a shared history. Now, the rest of you that are laughing that weren't there are only laughing because we're laughing, and so you don't have shared history. But if you want community, you got to have shared history. You have to have events that both of us were there, and we remember it. You and I. Many of you and I have much shared history. Now, the second ingredient that comes, families have tons of shared history. It's part of what makes you family. The second thing is permanence. I never stopped to count how many young people I went to Bible school with. But most times when we went to Bible school, as far as I know, we would get there and everybody was scared of each other and the girls could hardly eat in front of the boys. And through the term, we get more familiar. And after a while, we have to say goodbye and the girls cry on each other's shoulders and the boys are glad to get out of it, but they want each other's email addresses and they want to have a volleyball game when they get home. And 3 years later, they're not sure who to invite to their wedding. You know why? They had a little bit of shared history, but there's no permanence, okay? And I went to Bible school as a teacher or principal, I think 10 out of 11 years. And I have a handful of students and staff that number of years in a row, and there's a number of them that some of them still call me, or I call them once a month, every week. They have a new baby in their house. Brother Dwayne, guess what? I'm a dad. Well, congratulations. It all started back there with some shared history. But our relationship and the community we have formed is because of the permanence that we keep adding to the stack. All right? The third ingredient that you have with community is called proximity. Proximity. Now, this just means how close you are to each other. And this is one of the reasons why you can't have a congregation where the people live too far from each other. I made this up myself, so if I'm wrong, you can just laugh at me. But I think we all need to live close enough together that we bump into each other at the same grocery store. If all you ever do is come to church together, you better not have an ordination where you only ever saw people in their Sunday clothes. You don't know who you're voting for. You don't know who you're nominating. You don't have proximity. You want to be able to go over and help them cut the heads off of their chickens or something like that if you're going to have real community. Shovel their dirt, pull weeds in their garden, I don't know, clean windows, one lady on each side, talking and sharing history, making permanence, having proximity, close enough to do it. Okay, this is what Shane Hipps from Phoenix, Arizona is saying makes community. And the fourth thing that makes a community is when you have shared imagination, or later he says, shared vision. Now you're not looking back, you're not looking at the present, you're looking at the future. And he says that the unfortunate problem with social networking is that it has almost no connection to these three. At best, it has this one here, the shared imagination, where the things that we dream about is what pulls us together. It's what made us look for each other in the first place. And he said, the problem is that there's a lot of lonely people because they built their communities on imaginations or visions, and they don't have any history. And another way of saying that is they have relationships a million miles wide and an inch deep. One of the other writers that was looking at this thing and trying to bring social networking into its proper place said that people that don't have touch in their relationships are not going to have community. Now, what he was talking about, again, I'm not saying, but there's a reason why your preachers want to stand at the back of the church and shake everybody's hands, including the children, and say their name, and he wants to remember their name. He's trying to build these four all together, and it starts with that little touch. And the first time he says to the little child, "What is your name?" And through one or two teeth, they try to form it out. And he pronounces it the best way he could. And finally, he says it right. And the little child walks away. He said my name. And that trumps it in depth. That trumps anything that child will ever develop through its touchpad. Okay? It's the way we're made. We yearn for authenticity. The problem is that we've been burnt, and I'm moving outside the church again. I probably shouldn't say it that way, but so many people have been burnt in relationship that they prefer the virtual to the physical because it's safer and less vulnerable. It feels that way. In other words, if you can enter into a relationship where it starts out with a thumbs up and you can throw it away, and some of the social networks are set up in such a way that they might not even know that they got kicked out, that feels so much safer. But when you're all done and you have 10,000 followers, most of us would trade that off for a wife that we can dump our woes on, or a husband, or a close friend, or a family member, because that's how we're made. And any time that we start pushing our world out into the virtual at the expense, without having shared history, permanence, proximity, and shared imagination, you're only going to end up with something virtual and less satisfying, and probably end up getting bit by some of these dangers. No two stories are the same, but there are some repeatable patterns that are worth thinking about. The only other thing I wanted to talk about, and I'll try to keep this under about 3 or 4 minutes. Anybody know who Bill Gore is? Not Al Gore, but Bill Gore. Anybody know who Bill Gore is? Well, maybe Dale would. He's the inventor of Gore-Tex. Bill Gore one day walked out into his factory, and he said, "This is ridiculous. I don't even know who all works here." And so he sat down in his office one day and he started thinking about this. When did this happen, that I went from a little company where I had 2 or 3 men that we worked with to this big old company where I don't know everybody? And he started graphing it and thinking about it. And he came to the conclusion that it happened somewhere around the time when his factory grew to about 150 people. And one day, Bill Gore is talking to Robin Dunbar. Now, Robin Dunbar this is in 1992, is a British sociologist, and he's a research psychologist as well, which I don't know what that means, but that just says who he is. But these two men are talking, and Bill Gore tells him about this little light that came on, that somewhere around there is when he began to lose touch. And Robin Dunbar went home and thought about this, and he said, "You know what? I wonder if that's not how it is for everybody. I wonder if around that 150 number isn't about where all of us start to lose connections." So he has spent the last 1992 till now is 24 years, researching this and proving it and testing it. And matter of fact, this whole hypothesis has become so popular that in the world of sociology or psychology, if you just say Dunbar's number, everybody thinks 150. And it's where, if you ever heard me say, I've said this before, but if you ever heard me say that it's not possible for human beings to maintain more than 150 personal relationships, this is where I'm getting it. It's not coming out of the Bible, it's coming from Robin Dunbar. But he has researched this to the point where he discovered that there is some variation. IQ makes a difference, Even they've even gone out into the animal world, and they've discovered that since animal brains are more simplistic, they recognize far less animals. Most monkeys can recognize about 50 other monkeys, they claim. Birds, it's less than that. It's down to around a dozen. Human beings are around 150, where you just, you know, okay, The data bank of the average human brain, Dunbar says, is about 1,500. You, if you are average, you can name about 1,500 people as you meet them. If I would take you to a stadium and there'd be 3,000 Mennonites there, depending on your social world, you'd name about 1,500 of them. But most of them, according to Dunbar, about 1,350 of those, you'd say, yeah, I know who they are, but whew. You know, they used to live in Harrisburg, but I really don't know what happened to them. I went to second grade with them, but I don't know where they are today. I think he got married. Hey, did you get married? Yes, I have 3 children. Okay, well, I didn't know that. Okay, he's outside the 150. He has moved on. He can't pass through your world. And Dunbar says that the average person, as he maintains that 150, he said, some people are pretty good and they can get up toward 200. Some of them are kind of absent-minded, I think he called it, and they struggle to keep 100 going. Okay, but the average is about 150. What he found interesting is that the Roman army was set up, that centurions had 100 men, and he actually found writings where they would say that more than that was not beneficial because the centurion did not know his soldiers, and that's how they came up with that 100. He also found that the Hutterites have established in their mind that when their communities get to approximately 150, they start thinking about starting another Hutterite community. He also found, this man's from England, that the Amish do the same thing. Now, not all districts are greater or lesser than 150, but approximately around 150 is when they start talking, yeah, well, it's time to get another bishop and have another district. And they didn't even know they were doing it. It's just what they claim happened. It's fascinating material to read through. But I thought and I thought about that, and it leads you to watch people. Brother Luke said at a conference, some of you probably heard him say, that if you let a church get bigger than 150, you'll start forming subgroups underneath it. I don't know if he knew about Dunbar's number or not, but it's out there, and it's floating around. People are looking at that and saying, aha. Now, here's the complex thing. What do you do with Facebook in the middle of that? Because if you're really good, you can get 700 followers. Friends. Friends forever. I don't know. Friends. Can you? Dunbar doesn't know. And they asked him just recently, will social media change those numbers? And he says, well, he's not sure. He thinks perhaps, see, this man believes in evolution, and he thinks that if you raise a generation of children on Facebook, they will adjust, and Dunbar's number will no longer apply because they've been reprogrammed because their environment has changed. He's still watching to see if it holds out. You think he's going to see a change? It's fascinating things, but we're talking tonight. See, I told you about the dangers of just pushing yourself out to get as big of a crowd, and I'm just telling you in an offhanded way that there's a lot of research out there that says you're chasing the invisible and the unattainable, and it's not that great once you have it. So why don't you just work on your little group of 150, make it good, make it personal, make it real. See, one of the problems that we have with social media is as this thing grows, face-to-face relationships are dying. And there's a lot of reasons for it. But even in our own circles, we have people questioning why family visitation is dying. It's a very simple reason. Some people don't have anything to talk about. They've already sent that all information to them last week on PATH. Are you going to pull your accounts out and say, should we talk about this again? Or are you going to say, I don't have anything else to talk about. I sent it to you all as it was happening. I'll just stay home, I'm shot anyway. And we start to think like that. And at the end of the day, we've forgotten what Romans 15 said, that it never was about us. It was for me to seek to please my neighbor for his good, to his edification, even as Christ sought not to seek his good for his edification, but ours. And so the reason that you go visit somebody is not to make yourself feel better. You will reap that reward. But it's all about them. And that is the social network purpose. Social networking can serve a place as long as it is, FYI, for your information, it can serve a place as it is to pull other people's feedback in. And you say, well, if nobody ever talks about themselves, what is there to see on Facebook? Actually, there's nothing. but there's not that much anyway. I don't know if you ever looked, there's not that much anyway. Just go over and do something with them. There are souls all around you that would be so, if they're not in your church, they're in your village and in your neighborhoods. Just somebody to spend time with them, an older person. They're crying because their best friend was buried last week. You might not know them because you were not in a social network with them and you don't read the newspaper, but just go to the communities. Our lives can be so full of touch relationships versus virtual ones, and that's really what God is calling us to. It's a lot of material and there's a lot more that could be said, but God bless you as you work together in your little 150. Let's pray.